Welcome back, everybody, to The Arrow. My name's Chandler.
My name's Tony.
And this is the podcast where I talk about how I am just slowly deteriorating my voice to the point where I'm never going to have one ever again.
Yeah, I mean, you do a lot of talking, like career-wise, podcasts, streaming, socializedness in general.
Dude, and it's like, I try to have quiet days. Like, I intentionally will be like, today is a quiet day. Right? when does it ever work? I can't, like, for me, I can't just not talk to people. It's so hard.
Yeah. That's just who you are. It's embedded in your DNA.
So, we're here. This is the podcast where I power through something around the lesser end of an hour to then stream afterwards for the lesser end of 3 hours. Just to destroy my voice a little bit more. This is a podcast where we're talking about Avatar: The Last Airbender, Legend of Korra, everything related. We just got off of a really great bonus episode from last week. Why do I feel like we literally just recorded that?
Because we did. Remember, your voice was destroyed, so we had to record later than normal.
But why do I feel like that was like yesterday?
Oh no, that was Monday.
How many days ago was that? Like 4 days ago?
Yeah.
So we pushed back that podcast to record because my voice was busted up, which it still was in that episode. And then now we're recording this one early because I'm not going to be able to record. I have to cue this one early. Oh, my gosh. Okay. Tony, please, like, bug me about that tomorrow.
I will make a reminder.
Because if I don't post that tomorrow, it's not getting posted.
Okay.
Anyways. Tony, before we get started, I just want to let everybody know that they can follow us at The Aeropod on Instagram and Twitter. Keep up with us, social media, all that junk. Let's get into the episode.
All right, so we're getting into episode 5, Enemy at the Gate.
At the Gates! Enemy at the Gates, yes. So, just a little quick recap. It's been a couple weeks since we talked about the actual show. Korra just was reunited with Milo and Jinora after having spent some time with Toph in the Foggy Swamp, as well as Kuvira threatening Suyin that she was going to be coming for Zhao Fu if Suyin did not basically bow down to her immediately.
Bum, bum, bum. Yes, so we started this episode with seeing, like, Kuvira's entire army, like, heading to Zhao Fu. So we got a bit of information with that in The Calling, I believe, where the two soldiers that were left behind mentioned that, like, oh, it's so unfair. Like, Kuvira took her entire army, and they're heading to Zhao Fu. And that's how the airbending kids kind of knew and were able to tell Korra. Mm-hmm. So we see, like, their entire force, like, the mechs, the foot soldiers, the air balloons, like, everything heading to Zhao Fu. As Kuvira's kind of talking to Batara Jr., she kind of explains that, like, taking Zhao Fu is going to be completely different than how they took all the other states. Mm-hmm. Batara Jr. is straight up like, I'm ready to take it by force. Let's do this.
Yeah.
But Kuvira is way smarter than that. She understands, like, the eyes of the world are on her right now, more than ever after her kind of speech that she's not backing down and she's continuing to take power, even though everyone expected her to kind of just, willingly pass over her leadership over to the prince. Mm-hmm. So she understands that. So she's like, we have to do this right. There is a right way to do this, and we can't just, going guns blazing automatically. Mm-hmm. And their idea is to use Bolin since Sue is very fond of Bolin.
Yeah. Yeah, so we see in the previous season, Sue and Bolin strike up a friendship. I'm sure that over the time that we've missed, you know, there's more connection going on there, not only because Sue and Bolin get along well, but there's Opal and Bolin as well, right? Mm-hmm. And so Kuvira just mentions to Batara, like, we have Bolin and we've gotta have Bolin convince them to do this. Kuvira is essentially just saying, like, no, we're not gonna go in by force at first. We're just gonna use Bolin for his goodwill and use his good faith towards Sue and see where that goes.
So we end up catching up with Varric, and he's like doing some crazy science stuff. We saw prior to this, when they were in Republic City, that he took like pieces of the spirit vine with him, and then now he's kind of doing experiments. Kuvira explained to him, like, this is your top priority and the only thing you should be working on. And he's extracting energy from the spirit vines.
Yes. How much did the spirit vine weigh?
2 joules.
Yeah, 2 joules. I like that a joule is a unit of measurement. And that Varric is also a unit of measurement.
Yeah. I mean, he's creating, like this is, like, uncharted territory, so he can name these things whatever he wants.
Whatever really.
Yeah.
Yeah, I like that.
Yeah, I like that little touch. But we see they have like a massive amount of power stored within them that even his like huge machine wasn't capable of holding all of that energy just from one spirit vine. And we see against the wall that they have like multiple pieces that they're able to experiment on. And this turns out to be so powerful that the back of the train completely implodes as this like huge laser beam fires outwards, and Julie almost falls out of the train herself.
Yeah, and then Varric's like, Julie, you're too heavy, and she's like, no, Varric, you're just not strong enough. Like, I remember that part. That was very funny. Varric ends up like pulling her back up, and saving her, and they had this nice little romantic moment. As she's like, you saved me. He's like, of course I saved you. Grabs her face. Who's going to clean up this mess if I did it? What?
Yeah, that's a toxic relationship right there.
Toxic relationship.
Yeah, I don't really support that too much. But we see Kuvira come in and was asking, like, did we get attacked or anything? And Varric's like, no, there's just like, this is too powerful. Like, this is something that we can't continue to work on, and we have to shut it down immediately. So out of nowhere, out of character completely, Varric just has a conscious now.
Just completely out of nowhere.
Yeah, even explaining that, like, oh, like, my, there's a voice in my head that's telling me, nagging me of, like, the things I should be doing. And, like, Julie's like, yeah, that's your conscience.
Yeah.
He's like, oh, okay. So I don't know. That's kind of out of the blue, but maybe it's because of the humanitarian side that he's seen of what the good that they're doing, like the work that they're doing. So I mean, it quite possibly be that he has somewhat of a change of heart, because he mentioned prior to this he would just be in it for the money, like how much money I can make from this. But it might seem that just like Bolin, he's kind of seen more of the good that they're doing throughout the Earth Kingdom. Mm-hmm. And maybe he's trying to be a better person himself.
Yeah, you know, I think that this season, we get to see Varric's character take a giant turn, right? And this is the moment where it kind of starts. I never remember it feeling so abrupt. I remember it feeling a little bit more gradual, and I'm like, oh no, just one moment, and he's like, oh yeah, we should think. It's like, okay.
Yeah, I definitely wish it was a little bit more gradual, because it just seems like a huge like 180. Maybe when he had that conversation with Bolin when they were in Republic City, he mentions like, oh, like we have the army, like we have the resources, like they can't touch us, we can't do anything. Maybe if that conversation would have taken a different turn or a different direction and started kind of showing a little bit more of his compassion, and then it led to this, like, I would have, you know, it would have felt a little bit more natural, but just that massive switch, and then Kuvira threatens his life, literally holding him outside of the train. Then he's, like, forced to continue his work and not necessarily want to be able to continue this work.
Yeah, I guess, to me, if there had been any kind of, like, mention of Varric, either, like, recently or in past seasons about ideas that he had that like kind of turned early or something like that, like he has a history of like shutting down bad ideas, and he can like smell out a bad idea when he sees one, like even that would have made a little bit more sense. But it just felt like out of nowhere he's just like, oh, this is a weapon of mass destruction and that's bad and I'm just gonna acknowledge that now. And it's like, okay, which like logically for most people that's like, oh, okay, maybe we should not go in this direction, right?
Yeah. Or even like, ooh, Kuvira, like, this is the one technology that can stop you. Like, I don't want to end up creating the thing that can put the brakes on your empire.
Literally or anything, you know? Right? Like, literally anything. But it just seemed like there was like some off-screen time where Varric was watching the HBO show Chernobyl and just like was like, yep, no, we can't do this. We cannot do this.
So he is a new person. Mm-hmm. So now Varric's working by force. Under Kuvira's command, and he's finally seeing her true colors.
Yeah. Meanwhile, I mean, not necessarily meanwhile, but I guess outside of the city, you know, Korra is flying in with the Airbender kids, and I only mention this now, it's because mm-hmm. we don't have, like, multiple narratives in the story. I think we have basically one narrative in the story this week.
Kind of. We have a mention of Asami.
Yeah, we'll talk about that, but we're gonna leave Asami out of this for right now because her storyline is this episode 2 seconds and also to me incredibly unsatisfying. So Korra's flying in and it's kind of okay, I've got to let the world know and I've got to let Kuvira know that the Avatar is back, and Milo's like, Avatar mm-hmm. fight. And Korra's like, wait, no, what are you talking about? Like, I'm just gonna talk to her, dude. Like, she saved my dad's life. Like, she was a trusted guard in Kuvira's army, like, in Suyin's guard, and I think that she can be reasoned with. Meanwhile, while Korra's saying she can be reasoned with, Kuvira is literally threatening Suyin after Bolin fails to do the negotiation. So let's talk about that negotiation scene real quick.
Yeah, so it didn't really work out.
That's a good way of putting it.
So yeah, the Beifong family takes her entire army showing up as a threat and not necessarily as what Kuvira put it as, like, oh, look how much we were able to accomplish. Mm-hmm. And there still seems to be some hostility and a little bit of explanation from Avatar, because Sue mentions, hey, like, Avatar Jr., like, you belong here. You belong with us at home. And, like, so what? So I can live mm-hmm. under your shadow? So there's a lot of anger from him. And, again, later in this episode, we find out a little bit more of what happened 3 years ago. But it really seems like there might have been some conflict between Avatar Jr. and his family mm-hmm. prior to this, of him living under his parents' shadow and not really getting recognition himself. Even when we did see him, it was him, in past season, it was him assisting his father, not necessarily working on anything himself like his other siblings were.
I think this is going to get explored a little bit as we keep going, but I mean, what's different about his life now?
Yeah, I mean, that's true. I feel like he has more recognition. Well, Kuvira has definitely, she's very good at manipulating. She might make Avatar Jr. believe that, like, the only way we are triumphing and having these successes is because you're by my side, is because you're being able to help me. She even gets Bolin to get into their inner circle by mentioning, like, oh, like, you're a trusted advisor now in our inner circle, and, like, you're going to be able to help us, and I value you as a person. So she's very good at saying exactly what she needs to say in situations to make people mm-hmm. feel important, or withholding enough information that she still seems mm-hmm. like she's in the right.
Except for people who know exactly what she's doing, and it doesn't really work that way.
Yeah.
And sounds like a dictator or an unfaithful charismatic leader, president of the United States. I don't know, something like that. You know what I'm saying? oh man.
Yeah, Opal has is completely cold to Bolin and mentions like, you picked your side. Bolin's still trying to smooth things over, mentioning that, like, hey, like, like we've done so much good. Like there was a city that had no sodomobiles. Yeah. Is it now they have two sodomobiles
and a magnetic train and livestock or something like that, right?
Something like that, yeah. But it was like you don't see the aftermath of these cities. I see what happens. Citizens are forced to do day labor, and then those that don't agree with her are sent off. And that's such a confusing fact for Bolin that he gets extremely defensive. And it's like, no, you're wrong. Whatever you believe, whatever you think is happening, you're wrong. And again, that's just the lack of knowledge from Bolin's side, because he is only being shown what he needs to see.
Right, and then at that moment, Sue kind of steps forward and says to Kuvira, how dare you bring Bolin in here to try to sway us? You need to leave now. And then she basically says, like, okay, if you won't accept my offering, I'm going to have to take Zhao Fu by force. And then Bolin's like, what?
Yeah.
Excuse me?
You have 24 hours to join the Empire, or we're taking Zhao Fu by force.
Right. And so what ends up happening is that Bolin, Batar, and Kuvira are having a conversation in which Kuvira is... What? How did it start? I actually can't remember how it started. I just remember that Bolin is now being cornered by Batar and Kuvira and threatened to be sent to a re-education camp.
Well, Bolin mentions, like, are we really going to take Zhao Fu by force? And it's like, yeah, we have to do what we have to do. And it's like, you are essentially seeing, like, what we have to do. And there's things that we don't want to, but are necessary. And he's like, well, what if we just skip Zhao Fu and we... Then that means that the entire Earth Kingdom is united. Yeah, we win. And it's like, are you questioning me? Are you like, should I be questioning your loyalty to me? Like, is your loyalty to Opal greater than your loyalty to me? And even mentions, like, should I be sending you away to the
re-education camps?
It's like, what? Like, I thought we sent people there to learn new trades.
Yeah.
And it's like, no, not whatsoever. So Bolin's slowly starting to see that everything he knows is a lie.
Yeah.
Everything he's been working for, the humanitarian side of his job and leadership over the last couple years, is a blatant lie.
Yeah. Yeah, it's not true. It's that he has been on a false mission, essentially.
Yes.
I just want to, like, take a second to just, like, process that really quick, because I think that Bolin, I think we talk about Bolin, like, needing to get, like, better, I think we talk about Bolin needing to get, like, better character development and things like that, and how we don't like the situations he's written, and I still don't like the situation he's written in here, but just, like, processing, like, Bolin is, out of everybody, as much as anyone... I think just behind Korra, Bolin is, like, the person who wants to do right by people the most, I think. Like,
yeah, of course.
I think that Bolin is probably the person with, like, the biggest heart in this show. He's, like, he's probably one of the kindest people in this show, always just wants to make people happy. And so it feels like it's incredibly easy for him to fall into a trap of something like this where, you know, the first thing that you see is, like, oh, my gosh, people's lives are better. I have to step into this. And then to kind of... be let down like this.
Yeah, that's a hard situation to endeavor. As the younger sibling of two, Mako was taking the majority of the responsibility, protecting his brother as they grew up on the streets and trying to do the best he can with the situation that they had at hand. So it made Mako grow up faster than he needed to. And it gave Bolin still the opportunity to be a kid and be kind of a little bit more naive, emotional. And I think we see that here, where he still lets his emotions kind of drive him forward of, I am a good person, I want to do good, and this person's given me the opportunity to do it at a massive level, so yeah, I want to believe her. I want to make sure that I believe everything, and even being able to defend her. But also Kuvira being extremely manipulative and very good at that.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, the first thing that happens is that Bolin goes and he finds Varric, and he's like, hey, Varric, I need to tell you something. And Varric's like, I need to tell you something. It's like, Kuvir is crazy. And it's like, oh, God, I'm glad everybody's on the same page, right?
Yeah.
And basically, they tell each other what happens, and then they just decide, like, okay, what we're going to do is we're going to run away. Like, we're gonna escape, and they escape out the house, Why did I say hatch? House and hatch, maybe? They escape out the hatch, grab some of the Earth Kingdom, like, or the Kuvira's, like, mech suits, yeah, and stuff like that, and try to run away. This is all going on at the same time. I think this is all going on at the same time that Korra meets with
Sui. Yeah, that it most likely this the Suyin and Korra conversation happened just before that. Korra arrives to Zhao Fu. She ends up talking to Sue about it, and it's like, oh, I want to talk to her first. I want to reason with her. It's like, no, like, there is no reasoning with Kuvira. And she's like, but what happened? Like, what happened that this, like, huge rift came between you two? And she mentions, like, yeah, like, I've raised Kuvira since she was 8 years old. I consider her a part of my family. Mm-hmm. But then we get that flashback that Sue was selected by President Roku and the other leaders. Rhino. it was selected by the other world leaders to take control, mm-hmm, and take some power in the Earth Kingdom. Mm-hmm. But Sue didn't want that. She's like, I don't want to impose my beliefs on other people. And I don't feel that is the right decision or move for me. But they're like, you're respected. You have leadership. You have the name Beifong behind you. So if someone's going to take leadership and someone needs to take control, as the world leaders, we entrust that you are capable of doing so. Mm-hmm. But she didn't agree with this, and she found out that, I mean, well, Kuvira spoke up herself saying, like, well, like, Zafu's always been a beacon of hope. We have, like, technological marvels that we can share with the world, so why wouldn't you want to share this with people? She had no understanding that, like, what Sue wanted or what Sue didn't want. So it really seems that everybody that comes to Zhao Fu it's willingly. And they all essentially come together to make technological marvels, to advance themselves in culture and technology. So that's why it works. Mm-hmm. Because there's very wealthy families, there's very talented benders that all come together willingly and are able to have these discussions of beliefs and not necessarily be a tyrant where, like, we all believe this, so you guys should believe this too.
Right.
And that almost comes from the Hundred Year War. I mean, that's what the Fire Nation did.
Right.
There was the royal family that believed, like, we are the best. We are thriving as an economy, and so we are apparently doing this the best, so why shouldn't we be sharing this with the world?
Right.
And that's what they decided to do. So it almost seems like Sue kind of sees this and doesn't want to repeat history.
Yeah, I mean, that makes a whole lot of sense, because where are we at with Kuvira now? Kuvira is a conqueror, right? She's a conqueror and an imperialist. And not necessarily doing things for the greatest good of the beliefs of the entire nation. She's doing things the way that she thinks that they should be, right?
Exactly.
And so we see, you know, we've got to see that governor, right, basically have to turn over his entire colony over to her. Mm-hmm. Not because he wanted to, but because she put so much pressure on him. She put so much pressure on him and the state of the Fire Nation, but the state of the Earth Kingdom put so much pressure on him that he had no choice.
Yeah.
And that's not necessarily, that's like a question I had for you is, like, what does it mean to unify, right? Does it mean to unify everything under one dictatorship? Because in my head, that's not really unification, mm-hmm. right? I see a nation or a group of people as unified when they choose to follow a common cause, not when they're forced to.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yeah. That's the thing. You need to be able to find common ground and allow people to come to you like Sue did with her city and not necessarily impose your force, because it's only a matter of time before someone else rises up or your citizens rise up and decide that, hey, we don't agree with this, and there's enough of us that don't agree. Mm-hmm. So even if Kuvira did take complete control of the Earth Kingdom, it really seemed like it would only been a matter of time before there was increased chaos, until there was enough people that rallied together to be able to fight back and decide that, like, we don't want to do this. Mm-hmm. Like, this is unfair, and this is our land.
Absolutely. Absolutely. And so, I mean, Sue tells Korra this story, and tells the story of Kuvira leaving and taking a lot of Sue's guard with her. And basically says, even, like, Kuvira has... What would you say?
Well, even some of the wealthiest families in Zaofu.
Yeah. And Su Yin basically tells Korra, like, Kuvira's amassed too much power, and what I need you to do is go into the Avatar state and remove her army.
Yeah. So she's like, just go full force. But again, Korra's like, no, like, I think I can reason with her. And it's like, no, there is no reasoning with her. You need to take her down. But Korra doesn't really listen. Mm-hmm. And then this is again where we were talking about Korra possibly doubting her abilities. So mm-hmm. she even mentions it herself, like, normally, like, I just go in, like, fists first, but it doesn't work. Mm-hmm. But now she's literally having someone that knows Kuvira the best saying, like, no, this is the only option that you have. Mm-hmm. And her still kind of being hesitant of doing that and wanting to speak about it first. And this could be a speculation of her doubting her physical abilities because of her current history with not even being able to take down common thugs.
Yeah. What do you think Korra's responsibility to deal with this is, right? Like, I feel like she definitely has a role to play in this mm-hmm. conflict, but what is her role in actually, what do you believe her role is in actually needing to settle the conflict? Specifically, what do you believe, Tony?
What do I believe?
Yeah.
I mean, I think it is her responsibility as the Avatar. Historically, the Avatar is the peacekeeper and was supposed to be the mediator between all four nations as they were all divided in the past. And the Avatar is the middle ground, is the individual who is a part of all four nations, being able to bend all four elements and is able to find some peace. So I do feel like it's Korra's responsibility to intervene in any way that she can and to try to find some sort of a peaceful common ground. But it's definitely hard when another, like, this is way more messier than it was, you know, back in the day when people were just fighting it out. There's a lot more politics involved and beliefs of history repeating itself. So it does get a little bit more messier. But like I mentioned, Sue knows Kuvira the best. And she's literally telling her, like, you cannot reason with her. We have to take her down by force and stop her tiring.
Yeah. Yeah. I guess I just wonder, like, does Korra need to intervene here? Yes. Is it her responsibility to solve this conflict? I don't know if I believe necessarily that it's the Avatar's responsibility to solve the conflict, right?
Mm-hmm. That's why I say intervene.
Intervene, yeah.
It's that mediator role, and not necessarily like, okay, like, what I say goes, this is what I'm saying, okay, Avatar spoken, I'm out.
Right.
It's that middle ground that she needs to be able to assist with.
Right, but even to the point where I don't know if it's Korra's responsibility to go Avatar State and take out the entire army.
Yeah.
That's where I'm coming from, because I think that what Sue is asking Korra to do is outside of the realm of what Korra's actual responsibility is, and what Korra does there is her prerogative, not necessarily her responsibility. And Sue is making it kind of like a, Korra, this is what you're here to do. And yeah. I didn't necessarily take well to that. I didn't like that as much.
Yeah, it almost reminds me of the end of Avatar Last Airbender, where like everybody was telling Aang, like, you need to kill the Fire Lord. This is your responsibility. Like,
yeah.
You need, like, no, not just, you know, stop him. You need to kill him.
Mm-hmm.
But him not really, it's like, no, like, I think there's another way. It's like, no, you got to kill him.
Yeah, even Zuko, who had, like, yeah, it's like, even Zuko, who you would think is going to say something like, I don't know, violence is not always the way. And, like, he led Katara through that entire thing. And he was like, oh, my dad? No, take him out, please.
Yeah. Please.
So it's
Sue telling her, but also the rest of the world kind of backing up her decision because they need Kuvira out.
And then Korra goes to speak to Kuvira. Kuvira has good lip service, right? Like, she's always able to say what people want to hear, essentially. And she's able to kind of calm Korra down. And not calm Korra down, but, like, basically able to say, like, Korra, you know better than anyone, like, the responsibility that's been placed on my shoulders, essentially, right? Like, they have that conversation, and...
Yeah, it's like the Earth Kingdom descended into chaos while you were gone.
Right.
So, putting it back on Korra that, like, well, you were gone, so things were a huge mess, and we all had to pick up the pieces.
Right, and not even in, like, it felt like not even in a malicious way. It was just like just to fill you in really quick, this is what happened while you were gone. But the way that it comes off is, like, it's also that manipulative tactic, like, by the way, this is your fault, so don't step too far into this, right?
Yeah, exactly, because you had a responsibility, you didn't fulfill it, someone else had to take that role, and that was me. So I had to make decisions. To be able to try to keep some peace.
Yeah, and Kuvira basically says, like, hey, I'm going to call a truce until you go back and talk to Sue and talk some sense into her. And Korra's like, I think that might be the best idea, which is kind of where the episode ends. But there's a couple of things we didn't talk about there, right? But, like, I think that there's the Bolin, Julie, and Varric fight with Batar Jr. and the other automatons. Mm-hmm.
So they were trying to escape. Bolin wanted to go back to Zhao Fu, but Varric's like, nah, like they're screwed. Like,
we gotta go to Republic City.
They're not making this out alive. Let's go to Republic City, warn them about the crazy technology and power, energy vine stuff that Kuvira has to try to at least save, you know, someone that has a chance of being saved.
Yeah. And as they're escaping, they're attacked by Batar Jr. because Batar Jr. came to check on Varric because he was looking for Bolin. Finds out that they had been together, right? Or that Bolin had at least tried to
see Varric.
And so what ends up happening is that they get into this fight, and the only effective person in these mech suits is Julie. Julie, like, knows...
Yeah, she's... Woo! She's a whooping butt.
Julie was like... like, here's a fun fact. Whenever... A lot of times when, like, a new fighting game IP comes out, they come out in... IP means intellectual property. They come out in... in Japan first, most of the time, as arcade machines. And so what will end up happening is that some people who really like the game in Japan, these Japanese people will go to the arcade and they'll play this game over and over and over again and get really good. And then when it hits consoles and you see, like, online, like, throughout the world, the Japanese players are just, like, kicking everybody's butts because they've been able to play this game for months and months and months before. And that's literally what Julie was doing. She's like, oh, not only do I know how this works, I basically built these. I helped design these. I know exactly how this works.
I thrive to be a Julie.
Yeah.
Oh, my God.
Julie was really, really great in this episode, actually. She, you know, holds them off, but, you know, with no help from Bolin and Varric, she's not really able to do too much.
I mean, Bolin was able to do stuff. Yeah. Like, Varric was sabotaging.
Yeah. Varric was literally throwing.
Bolin was able to do some stuff. I really like some moves that he used. Like, he he propelled himself into the air with earth bending, and like that is a huge fall. So if he would have just landed, he would have broken his legs. Mm-hmm. But you see for a quick second, as he's colliding with the ground, he shatters the earth underneath him to soften the blow. I was like, whoa, that's pretty interesting. So it seems like Bolin's kind of skill is definitely improving.
And also over the propels years. The lava forward, right? Like, yeah. makes a small river of lava straight in front of him, which, you know, before mm-hmm. he was able to just make a small
pool. It's like sloshing. Yeah, it's like sloshing
this it around. This was a much more controlled, focused blow of lava straight forward. Mm-hmm. And then immediately after that, is able to go back to regular earthbending to trap the other two guards just before Batara is, like, holding Varric by the head and saying, like, yeah, you should stop now.
So they get captured.
Yeah, they get captured. They get taken back to Kuvira. And Kuvira basically says, like, Bolin and Julie are going to go to a re-education camp for basically the rest of their lives. And mm-hmm. Varric is going to be forced to work on the project that I told him to work on. And then Julie comes in again.
Mm-hmm.
And basically it's like, no, you can't punish me because my only crime was being loyal to the wrong person. I was loyal to Varric for all of these years because I thought he had a great mind and that he was a genius, but now I see the truth. He's nothing compared to you, Kuvira. Varric's a buffoon. I should have never followed him. And if you let me go now, I'll serve you with all of my loyalty for the rest of my day, basically kind of thing, right? Just mm-hmm. like this really beautiful speech, and then says, guards, do the thing.
Not the thing.
Yeah. And Kuvira, like, you know, likes it. You know, as much as Kuvira knows what people want to hear, Kuvira also knows what she likes to hear. And
She's enticed.
Yeah, she's enticed, and she lets Julie go and join their team. Mm-hmm. The only other thing that we need to talk about here is Asami.
Yes.
There are three scenes of Asami, each one lasting. I think the first one was like 42 seconds. The second one was like 6 seconds, and the third one was like 33 seconds or something like that.
Yeah, it was very random.
Mm-hmm.
I kind of enjoy what it is, as we kind of start seeing the process of Korra healing from her traumatic events, kind of coming to terms with things that are happening in her mm-hmm. life. They're kind of doing the same thing with Asami and trying to make amends a little bit with her father and heal from those scars that she has. But it's just so quick. Mm-hmm. And there's not really much. Like, if this was fleshed out a little bit more, or even if she had the opportunity to bounce off these ideas off of someone else, like if she ended up going to visit Mako and it's like, hey, can I just have a little bit of time? Like, I just needed to talk to someone. And she kind of thought out her thought processes with Mako and mentioned like, oh, like my dad's been writing letters to me over the years and I haven't read any of them. And Mako kind of has that conversation where it's like, your dad did bad things, but at least you have parents type of thing. Like something a little bit more.
I mean, I think that these are things that could have happened in book 2 and 3. And then when we get to this point, right? Like, I think that these are things that could have happened, like, in book 2, Asami goes to see her dad and mm-hmm. She just wants to ask him questions. And he's still kind of angry about everything. And she is hurt and angry. And mm-hmm. she goes maybe once or twice in book 2. And then she might go once or twice in book 3, and then her dad's not so angry, but she's still angry, and then she comes back, or maybe she goes back once in book 3.
I would have been more mad at that if it was like I saw him like twice in a whole season. I was like, what? Why would you do that? Like, if it was that scattered, personally, my personal opinion, I would be more mad because of, like it would have seemed even more random of like two scenes of this in a whole season with no payoff.
I just know where this goes, and it doesn't...
Exactly.
Like, to me, it's not believable. Asami has never mentioned her dad, ever. And then mm-hmm. all of a sudden, we're supposed to feel something for him.
Yeah. Yeah, that's the thing. With the hindsight of knowing where this ends up, yes... it would have been good to like have more scenes like throughout the seasons. But I think I personally would have been more mad because if I saw him like two or three times in a whole season and then nothing happened at the end, I would have like, why would you do that? And I wouldn't have that realization until the very end of the series.
But I think that's what a payoff is. Like, I...
yeah, eventually. But I think that within that amount of time, I would have been frustrated even longer.
I guess. I don't know. Something needs to change with this storyline. It's not convincing. I mean, you get 42 seconds of Asami just, like, putting letters down in front of her dad, and she's like, I don't want to read these. And it's like, what are these, right? Like, what is this? We don't even, like... They barely explain it through the context of the scene. We see a few seconds of Asami staring at a kid playing with their dad in a park. Mm-hmm. And then we see Asami come back later and say, let's play some Pai Show. It's like, I don't know. And
it's like, I still don't forgive you, but I want to start like with it, which I understand. But like, I wish there would have been some narrative, some explanation with another character.
Even if it had been...
I'm not saying that saves it, but that at least gives the audience more of an insight on like what's happening or her thought processes.
Or even if it was like a... You know what would have been great? What would have been great is if they had made an episode that would have filled us in on everything that happened in the last 3 years for these other characters, like we did with Korra. And it was called Tales of Republic City. And this was Asami's story. And we see Asami's story start here.
Yeah.
I think that would have been the kind of happy medium between my idea and this. Because then it gives us context as to what Asami has been up to in the last 3 years. It gives us context for her process with her father, because even in that episode it wouldn't have to end with Asami starting the forgiveness process. It would even be able to like leave off with her being angry, and it would leave off with her father writing her letters and like Asami like in bed at night crying, and then it moves on to another story or something like that, right? And then we get to this episode, and then this all makes a little bit more sense.
I think that would have helped the narrative way more.
So anyways, what are you going to give this episode, Tony?
I want to give this episode an 8.
An 8?
Okay. Yes.
I kind of want to give this episode a 7.
Yeah, I was teetering. At maybe a 7.5. Okay. But I think I'll stick with an 8.
Yeah, it's not a bad episode. I mean, it's not a bad episode. It's very entertaining. I think that there's some things that felt clunky about the episode in the sense of Korra's place in the episode. I feel like in place of like some of the dialogue to me just felt like just very like here and then all the way to the other side of the room immediately.
Yeah, kind of speaking
specifically about any scene with Kuvira in it. I think that this is some of her weaker dialogue in the entire series. And so I think that episode suffers a little bit for me. And I think that the Asami stuff brings it down just a little bit. I was like, okay, this is really all I'm going to get.
Yeah, I feel it.
So I'm going to say it's a 7. I will say, as we're watching this season, I'm sticking with as we're watching this, I still believe that if I'm gonna think about these seasons objectively, I almost want to say that season 4, structurally, as a full product, I think is better than season 3, but I think that season 3 is still my favorite. Like, I think there's a difference between it being better and it being my favorite, you know what I mean?
Yes. I still like season 3.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, yeah. I still like season 3. I still like Star Wars Episode 3, even though it's not the best one, you know what I mean? Yeah. Like, I always come back. I don't like Star Wars as much as some people might think I do.
I don't know. I thought you're like the biggest fan in the world.
And I'm not. I really don't care about Star Wars all that much.
I thought
much.
Your banner just... behind you was Star Wars.
Nah, it's just a guy. It's just an astronaut. I'm big into astronomy.
It's just space.
All right, everybody. Well, thank you so much for listening to The Arrow. My name's Chandler.
My name's Tony.
And as always, we will catch you all next time.
Bye.